LibriVox.blogsome.com. This reading by Gordon Ramsay. International Episode by Henry James. LibriVox Section 2. The two young Englishmen inaugurated the policy of not resistance at Westgate by submitting with great docility and thankfulness to her husband. He was evidently a very good fellow, and he made an impression upon his visitors. His hospitality seemed to recommend itself consciously, with a friendly wink, as it were, as if it hinted judicially that you could not possibly make a better bargain. Lord Lambeth and his cousin left their entertainer to his neighbors and returned to their hotel. There they spent 3 or 4 hours in their respective shower baths. Percy Beaumont had suggested that they ought to see something of the town, but oh, damn the town! His noble kinsman had rejoined. They returned to Mr. Westgate's office in a carriage, with their luggage, very punctually. But it must be reluctantly recorded that this time he kept them waiting so long that they felt themselves missing the steamer, and were deterred only by an amiable modesty from dispensing with his attendance and starting on a hasty scramble to the wharf. But when at last he appeared, and the carriage plunged into the purlieu of Broadway, they jolted and jostled to such good purpose that they reached the huge white vessel, while the bell for departure was still ringing and the absorption of passengers still active. It was indeed, as Mr. Westgate had said, a big boat, and his leadership in the innumerable and interminable corridors and cabins with which he seemed perfectly acquainted, and of which anyone and everyone appeared to have the entree, was very grateful to the slightly bewildered voyagers. He showed them their stateroom, a spacious apartment embellished with gas lamps, mirrors on pied, and sculptured furniture. And then, long after they had been intimately convinced that the steamer was in motion to march upon the unknown stream that they were Eventually, at the insistence of the discriminating black, our young men went and had some supper in a wonderful place arranged like a theater, where in the gilded gallery upon which little boxes appeared to wait, a large orchestra was playing operatic expressions, and below, people were hanging out bills of fare as if they had been programmed. All this was sufficiently curious, but the agreeable thing later was to sit out on one of the great white decks of the steamer in the warm breezy darkness and in the vague starlight to make out the line of low and mysterious coast. The young Englishman tried American cigars, those of Mr. Westgate, and talked together as they usually talk, with many odd silences, lapses of logic, and incongruities of transition, like people who have grown old together and learned to supply each other's missing phrases, or more especially, like people thoroughly conscious of a common point of view, so that the style of conversation superficially lacking in finish might suffice for reference to a fund of associations in the light of which everything was all right. "We really seem to be going out to sea," pursued Wilkins. small green fields, bordered with low stone walls of rude construction. He saw a deep blue ocean lying beneath a deep blue sky, and flecked now and then with scintillating patches of foam. A strong, fresh breeze came in through the curtainless casements and prompted our young men to observe generally that it didn't seem half a bad climate. They made other observations after they had emerged from their rooms in pursuit of breakfast, a meal of which they partook in a huge bare hall where 100 Negroes in white jackets were shuffling about upon an uncarpeted floor, where the flies were superabundant and the tables and dishes covered over with a strange, voluminous integument of coarse blue gauze, and where several little boys and girls who had risen late were seated in fastidious solitude at the morning repast. These young persons had not the morning paper before them, but they were engaged in languid perusal of the bill of fare. This latter document was a great puzzle to our friends, who, on reflecting that its bewildering categories had relation to breakfast alone, had an uneasy prevision of an encyclopedic dinner list. They found a great deal of entertainment at the hotel, an enormous wooden structure, for the erection of which it seemed to them that the virgin forests of the West must have been terribly deflowered. It was perforated from end to end with immense bare corridors, through which a strong draft was blown, bearing along wonderful figures of ladies in white mourning dresses and clouds of Valencian lace, who seemed to float down the long vistas with expanded fur pillows, like angels spreading their wings. In front was a gigantic veranda on which an army might have encamped, a vast wooden terrace with a roof as lofty as the nave of a cathedral. Here our young Englishmen enjoyed, as they supposed, a glimpse of American society, which was distributed over the measureless expanse in a variety of sedentary attitudes, and appeared to consist largely of pretty young girls, dressed as if for a fête champêtre, swaying to and fro in rocking chairs. We were rather knocked up, but we feel wonderfully better. We had such a jolly voyage down here. It's so very good of you to be mine. Yes, it's so very kind of you, murmured the old man. Mrs. Westgate stood smiling. She was extremely pretty. Well, I did my And some people liked the hats, but not hats. I was always a heretic. I always got my hats in Paris. You can't wear an English hat. Just I would, unless you dress your hair a long ways. But I must say, that is a talent I have never possessed. In Paris, you will make things to suit your peculiarities. But in England, I think you would like much more to have. How shall I say it? One thing for everybody. I mean, as regards dress. I don't know about other things, but I have always supposed that in other things, everything is different. I mean, according to people, according to their classes, and all that. I'm afraid you will think that I'm going to take a very favorable view of you, but you know you can't take a very favorable view of the Dover Street in the month of November. That has always been my fate. Do you know Jones's Hotel in Dover Street? That's all I know of England. Of course, everyone admits that the English hotels are your weak point. It was always the most frightful fog I couldn't seem to try my heels on when I got over to America into the light. Usually found they were twice too big. The next time I need to go in the season, I think I shall go next year. I want very much to take my sister. She has never been to England. I don't know whether you know what I mean by saying that the Englishmen who come here sometimes get spoiled. I mean that they take things as a matter of course, that deserve done for them. Now naturally they are only a matter of course when the Englishmen are very nice. But of course they are almost always very nice. Of course this isn't nearly such an interesting country as England. There are not nearly so many things to see, and we have a mature country life. I have never seen anything of your country life. When I am in Europe, I am always on the continent. But I have heard a great deal about it. I know that when you are among yourselves in the country,
Thank you.
extremely combination of qualities. The young girl beside him, it may be attested without further delay, thought him the handsomest young man she had ever seen. And Bessie Alden's imagination, unlike that of her companion, was irritable. His mind. Hurrah.